the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Welcome to this March 2019 edition of Education Now. In this edition, we focus on the Oakland Public Schools strike with Betty Olson Jones. The fight in Oakland is a critical fight for all teachers in every state. Welcome, Betty Olson Jones. What's the latest news you have for us on the Oakland strike?
Thank you, Athena. I'm really glad to be with you today. Well, the teachers did sign approve the tentative agreement, and so they do have a new contract that was approved on Sunday, March, let's see, that would have been the 3rd, and the vote was relatively close. There were 64%, I believe, that voted for this retroactive year, 2017-2018, which is a 3% bonus, and then 58% voted for the next few years. So there, you know, it's been interesting because as a whole, it's a real victory, but I know that there were a lot of teachers that felt that they could have stayed out longer. And I think the union was worried about losing the support of the broader community and also believed that at this point, this is as far as the contract could go. You know, as I'm sure you know, a contract does not, it's not the end-all and be-all. And I think the exciting thing about the Oakland strike, which lasted for 7 days, is that it really set the stage for future actions. The outpouring of support from the teachers, the students, the parents, the broader community was unbelievable. It was really thrilling to watch.
Oh, I'll say I have enjoyed watching it so much. I can't tell you how exciting this is. For me, I've been fighting for public education for such a long time. Once my children were grown and settled, and I closed my school, because I think I told you that I pulled my children out of public school in California after Proposition 13, because I just, you know, I chose to have these children. And California, we chose to go to graduate school in California because it was free, and it was second.
Right.
And it was second only to New York in quality. So, I mean, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do that to my children. It would just, and I didn't have the money to go move to some affluent area like Palo Alto, where, you know, they said, oh, no to Proposition 13. They said our property taxes are going to continue going to our public schools. But I couldn't go live there. So, you know, that was my choice. Well, then after I closed the school and my boys were settled, I just thought, you know, I'm going to give the rest of my years to fighting for public education so that we can finally get back to where it was before Reagan, you know. It was so fantastic. It was just amazing here in California before that.
Right. And, you know, that's one of the things that the new president of the Oakland Education Association, who led the strike, talked about in some of his remarks. Keith Brown is this wonderful, wonderful leader. And he grew up in Oakland. He went to Oakland Public Schools. And he remembers when he was a child in Oakland, and he's in his 40s now. He remembers that there was a nurse at the school. There was a counselor at the school in elementary school and then in high school. And now, I mean, that was one of the big things that Oakland was fighting for, was lowering reducing the caseloads for counselors and resource specialists and psychologists, speech therapists and nurses. because right now we have 22 nurses in Oakland and 37,000 students.
Oh, that's...
And I know in my last... It's insane. In my last 2 years of teaching, after I termed out from... I was the president of the Oakland Education Association from 2006 to 2012. And when I termed out, I went back to the classroom for 2 years. And just in those, you know, from when I started teaching in 1994 to when I retired in 2014, I just saw the increase in the numbers of children with special needs, the numbers of children with desperate need for nursing help, you know, kids with diabetes, kids with real issues, and the nurses were running ragged, running from one end of the city to the other. And when I first started, we had a nurse full time at the school where I taught. By the time I left, there were no nurses available. The caseload is just impossible for them. So, yeah, Prop 13 really, really set the stage for cutting the heart out of public education. And then since then, there's been a real concerted attempt by billionaires and privatizers to further take away the resources from public schools and transfer those resources both to charter schools and to voucher programs. In California, it's mainly charters. Oakland has the largest percentage of charters in the district of any district in California. A third of the schools are now in charters. So we have 86 public schools and 44 charter schools in Oakland. And that was one of the key issues in the strike, that we have to really push back against this, and we have to educate the community about the unregulated growth of charter schools. It costs Oakland students $57 million every year. That comes from an in-depth study by In the Public Interest that came out earlier last year. And the strike really changed that conversation. Now we have, like Gavin Newsom just fast-tracked a bill in the legislature that would call for greater accountability from the charter schools, would make them have to conform to Brown Act rules, a number of other things. We're really pushing for even more accountability and more fundamental changes to the charter school law, and beginning with a moratorium on any further expansion of charter schools in California.
Yeah, I sure hope so, because I'm telling you, those for-profit charter schools are killing us. And you know, the other sad thing is that, you know, when charters got started, they were an experiment. They were, you know, like a parents and teacher could, you know, decide, oh, they wanted to do a charter because, you know, they wanted to do a particular philosophy of education, or there's a group in the community who really didn't like what was happening with Prop 13, and so they wanted to start these charters. And they're cool charter schools. They really are. Man, they're run by teachers. They're run by teachers and parents. And so many people lumped them in with these for-profit charter schools. And I tell them, look, watch it. You know, don't do that. You know, you're stepping on the toes of these parents and these kids that really love their school. So, you know, let's stop those for-profit charter schools for sure. I heard they were trying to get into the L.A. School district, where there is a huge Chicano population in L.A., and that's where Betsy DeVos wants to do charter schools. And, you know, it really breaks my heart. It breaks my heart, Betty, because how, you know, can some of those mothers even understand the language so that they can advocate for their children? Or can the unions, you know, educate those parents and say, you need to be against this, you know, you lose control?
But right. Well, one thing that – oh, go ahead.
No, I've just said I've heard that a lot of these parents have to work so much they can't go to meetings.
Right. And one thing that I know California Teachers Association is doing now is really focusing on trying to unionize charter school teachers, and a number of the charter school teachers in Oakland have joined a CTA union. In fact, a number of the charter school teachers came out in support of the strike. And
yes.
I think that's really positive, because I look at it the way I look at sweatshops. You know, in the old days, we would fight for the right of sweatshop workers to unionize. We wouldn't just tear them down along with the sweatshops. So I always, when I was president of the union, and still try to make a distinction between, you know, parents looking for the best situation for their child. They need to find it now. They can't wait 10 years down the road. But on the whole, I would try to talk to people about why charter schools as a whole have strayed, for the most part, from their original purpose. I mean, originally they were developed with the input of unions. And as you said, seen as a tool for innovation, they haven't kept that promise. And in fact, because the privatizers saw them as a really convenient vehicle for pushing their own agenda, it really took away from what they were meant to be. And that's one thing I wanted to see if your listeners would sign a petition online that we have called charterlawreform.com. If you go to charterlawreform.com, it takes you directly to a site where you can sign a petition that goes directly to your legislators, asking them to enact certain fundamental changes in the charter school law, which hasn't been changed since 1992 when it was first founded. And one of the key ones is allowing school districts to take into account the cost of charter schools coming into the district. Like I just said, it cost Oakland students $57 million last year, and every year. And that's because the school board is not allowed to take that into account when they're deciding whether or not to approve a charter school. It makes it really difficult to say no to ones that we don't feel are in the best interest of students.
Now, did you say that was charter form recall?
No, charter law reform.
charterlawreform.com.
All run together. So if you just write it without any spaces, charterlawreform.com.
Got it.
It will take you directly to the website. Mm-hmm.
Charter law reform.
charter.com.
Law reform.com. All run together. And that's where they can go to sign the petition, listeners. That's where you can go. And I'll add that link to the promotion, Betty. So that
the
people who get the promotion will have the link right there for them. Okay, well,
excellent.
Yeah, oh yes, for sure. Some of the issues now that you guys were fighting for, and that it still has to be ratified. Is that right?
No, it was ratified on Sunday, on March 3rd. So there is a new contract. Teachers have gone back to work, and they are operating under the new contract.
Mm-hmm. So there's nothing more to do.
Well, I'm glad you asked that. Not as far as the contract, but what really came out of the strike, and the president of OEA, Keith Brown, really emphasized this, because there was a lot of democratic debate about the contract, and there were a lot of people that said we could have stayed out longer, we could have won more. And Keith said, you know, at this point, I think this is as far as we could have gone, but it's not over. The contract's been signed, the contract's been settled, but what hasn't been settled are issues like keeping schools open. The Board of Education president said that she's going to introduce a resolution calling for a 5-month pause on school closures and consolidations to get more community input. And that's something that OEA and the community are going to have to really stay on top of, because the district, there's a long history of why Oakland is in such financial straits. And it goes back many years, but just more recently, the state takeover in 2003 really set the stage for continued budgetary problems and financial problems in Oakland. And so one of the ways that the board is trying to balance the budget is through school closures. Now, we've looked at study after study, and school closures just do not save money. Maybe a tiny bit in the beginning, but what you end up with the school closure is the tearing apart of communities and tearing apart of school environments. Right now, they're talking about, well, they voted to close one of the middle schools in Oakland, which ironically was one of the new small schools that was formed in the early 2000s. Roots Academy, it's a small school in Oakland that has a very loyal teaching staff and a loyal student population, and they decided that they're going to close it. This has led to huge outpouring from the community. And there are 23 other schools that are on the radar for closure. And so that's one way where, even though the strike has been settled, the work is not finished around keeping schools open. So OEA plans to continue organizing with the community and advocating against school closures. And most of these school closures, the ones that they're proposing, are in working class Black and Latinx communities in Oakland. So that's a really key thing that people will be working on. And then the other thing is what I was talking about before, the charter schools, really pushing for a moratorium on further charter schools, because the charter schools in Oakland, by and large, take some of the higher performing students. They segregate students. They don't take special ed students at the same rate as Oakland public schools do. And so it puts a huge burden on the public schools. It drains the resources, and that's something that we want to continue working on. They're also planning to continue working around trying to recruit more nurses to the schools. That was one area. I know the nurses did say that they were going to vote against the tentative agreement because they didn't get they really didn't get what they were hoping for. And one of the big problems is, if you're a nurse in Oakland and you can work at Kaiser or another place, you're going to get paid a ton more money than you get paid working for the Oakland Public Schools. So they did, there will be a salary increase for nurses, not this year, but I believe next year. And they're really working to try and create the conditions for hiring more nurses and attracting more nurses to the Oakland Public Schools.
Now, what about libraries and librarians?
Oh, libraries and librarians are another issue, and that's something that they're going to continue working on as well. There are so few librarians left in Oakland. I remember when I first started teaching, we had a librarian in the school. And then by the time I ended teaching, the PTA, or the equivalent of the PTA, was finding the money to pay for that librarian in our school for a couple days a week. Most schools can't afford that. So I remember going to Fremont High School, it was one of the large comprehensive high schools. It then was divided into four small schools. And then a few years ago, they were trying to put it all back together again, but under very suspicious circumstances. They basically were saying that every teacher there had to reapply for their job, and so many teachers that wanted to stay there were not rehired. When I was going out trying to organize around that issue, we met in the library. I said, well, isn't there a librarian? Oh, no, there's no librarian. They had a library aide who came maybe once a week. So the whole purpose of libraries to be not just repositories for books, but places where students can get support with doing research, where, you know, that they're living, breathing entities, it hardly exists in Oakland unless the parents raise the money to hire somebody. And so that's an issue that was also front and center in the strike. And I didn't see, I've read through most of the tentative or through the contract. I didn't see anything specifically about libraries, but I could be wrong. I didn't see it here in the shorter version of the contract.
So, okay, so let's see what they did get. They feel like they got a living wage, an 11% salary increase over 4 years, plus a, what is that, a 3% bonus upon ratification?
Right.
And they forced OUSD to invest in keeping teachers in Oakland, which will give the kids experienced teachers in their classrooms, dramatic increases for substitutes, and tying such pay to the wage scale so the substitutes never fall behind again.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, right. So that it's a start. And again, it's as Keith and other leaders said, it's not, you know, they were pushing for a 12% increase over 3 years. So this is less, and given the rate of inflation, Oakland teachers are still at the bottom of the entire county, the entire Bay Area. This brings them a little bit closer to the median, but there's a long ways to go. I know when I was president, we had some task forces about how do you recruit and retain teachers. And, you know, it's partially its salary because the cost of living is so high in the Bay Area. Partially its class size. So even getting a slight reduction in class size is significant. But the whole issue of teacher retention is so critical in Oakland. 73% of the children in Oakland Public Schools qualify for free and reduced lunch. I mean, it's you would think in the fifth largest economy in the world that our state would see this as a huge emergency. We're pushing to cancel the state debt. Every year, Oakland has to pay $6 million toward repayment of the loan that was granted to them in 2003. And this is a huge albatross around the neck of the teachers and parents in Oakland. So a huge investment really needs to be made in a district where so many of the children live in poverty. So many of the children are newcomers and need additional supports. And that's something that we're really hoping that under the leadership of State Superintendent Tony Thurmond and with Gavin Newsom as the governor, we're really hoping to push that and say, you know, forgive the state debt. Let's just give Oakland the support they need and other large urban districts to get out from under this, you know, the just trying to make do with less than what we should have.
Right. Yeah, I like Tony Thurmond. I like him a lot, yes. and I hope he does everything that we've projected he will. Now, so you guys achieved getting more student supports, and you achieved lowering the class size, although it's not as low as you'd like it.
Right.
And so, but that's an improvement. And a school closure moratorium, you talked a bit about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you...
Well, there's a school closure pause, and it's only for 5 months. So the, you know, the concern there is that 5 months takes us into the summer, and then they couldn't close schools this summer, additional schools, because, you know, you have to allow for time for, you know, moving, et cetera. So we're hoping... There's a deep, deep hope that with this five-month pause, that will give OEA and other community members time to really organize and keep educating the community and mobilizing the community against school closures. And at the same time, trying to get more funding from the state so that they don't have to go that route. Continually saying that school closures do not save money. and they just disrupt communities. So we're really hoping that with that pause, there can be more effort and more attention paid to trying to make that into a moratorium.
Right.
On school closures.
Yeah, and the charter school moratorium. And on holding those charter schools accountable.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. I mean, that to me, that is so very important to hold them accountable, because now they're not. And I'm glad that there are teachers who are teaching in charter schools that joined the strike. Because I've heard really bad things about some of these charter school teachers, that they're Teach for America people who came mm-hmm. in and they have no experience, but you know, the charter school said, well, we'll pay for your education if you come and teach for us. I mean, what does that mean,
right.
not having a credentialed teacher in a classroom,
right.
especially of kids that are at such high risk?
Right.
I just don't get it.
Right. And yet in Oakland back in 2007, I believe it was, when Mayor Dellums was mayor of Oakland, we instituted a program called Teach Tomorrow in Oakland. And the whole focus of it was to wean the district from hiring so many Teach for America teachers, because they were bringing in all kinds of them. And some of them stayed and are still in Oakland to this day and are wonderful teachers, but so many of them saw it as a stepping stone to go into administration or into mm-hmm. another more lucrative profession. So Teach Tomorrow in Oakland was formed as a way of trying to recruit teacher candidates who were born and raised in Oakland, who had a real affinity for Oakland, weren't just coming from an Ivy League school and popping into Oakland to quote-unquote save the children there. These were people that had been raised in Oakland and knew the conditions in Oakland and were a part of the community. So it's quite successful. A number of the teachers, again, from Teach Tomorrow in Oakland are still there. And what they did was make a 5-year commitment to teach in Oakland and got support from the Teach Tomorrow in Oakland folks to do that. And that, unfortunately, the funding dried up. Mayor Dellums was able to get a lot of funding from his contacts, from being in the, you know, in Congress. But when he left, and then we had a series of superintendents who, the latest one being Antoine Wilson, who ended up in D.C. as the chancellor and had to resign in disgrace. He came and increased the deficit in Oakland to such an extent that we're still reeling from that, brought in all kinds of administrators and, you know, just the story of Oakland. Somebody needs to write a really lengthy history of Oakland, because it's a really sad tale of how vultures come in and take advantage of a beautiful community filled with dedicated teachers and parents and just run roughshod over it. It's just really horrifying.
It is. It really is horrifying. Now, recently on your Facebook page, I saw this article that you had posted called Where Did the Money Go?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's really about California public school history. Where did the money go? Where did the money go, Betty?
Well, we go back to Prop 13 for one thing. And as that article points out, with Prop 13 changing the way that schools are funded, wealthier districts could still make up the difference. But with Prop 13, it changed property taxes. It put a limit on property taxes. And yet, businesses could wiggle out of, if you changed a business from one place to another, they still had a way of not having to pay the additional taxes. So one thing that's in the works for 2020 is a split roll tax, where homeowners would not be affected by it, but business owners and corporations would be. So that would bring in a lot more money into the state coffers for education.
And it's called a split what? It's called a split what?
Split roll, R-O-L-L.
Split
so
roll.
Basically, you're splitting it between homeowners and mm-hmm. companies and corporations.
Right.
And that will be on the ballot in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And when Prop 13 came in, it cut funding by about, I think that article said about 30%.
Mm-hmm.
So right away you had pre and post, and as you said, pre-Prop 13, California had the best community colleges, state colleges, schools in the nation, and now we're like hovering around the bottom in per pupil funding, in libraries in school, in class size, you name it, we're anywhere from 41st to 50th, and in all those areas. So there is a real state funding problem, because right now I think that article said about 58% of funding comes from the state, only about 9% from the feds, only 1% from the lottery. People think the lottery was going to provide all this money, and it doesn't. And then the rest from local taxes. So the funding really needs to change. I mean, there needs to be a much larger infusion of money into the schools. But many of us feel that this is very purposeful, that Prop 13 was part of a well-orchestrated plan to defund public schools. There's just ample evidence that the billionaires and privatizers just want to get their hands on public education, because it's one of the last few real public institutions, and there's money to be made. I mean, if you've got a charter school, you've got a for-profit charter school or private charter school, it's publicly funded but privately run. So you're getting the money for each child that comes to your school, and then you have unlimited authority on your own of what you do with that. That's where the accountability is so important. I mean, we've had unbelievable examples throughout the country of what charter schools are able to do with the money that they get from the public. So that needs to change. But also in Oakland's particular case, and in other urban districts that were taken over by the state, back in 2003, there was a bill, Senate Bill 39, that put Oakland under state control. And I won't go into all the history, it's fairly complicated, but there are many of us that believe, looking back, that it really was an attempt at a land grab. There were, over the years, after Oakland was put under state control, and supposedly the state administrator was supposed to come in, help clean up the finances, along with the help of what's called FICMAT, which is an acronym for Fiscal Crisis and Management Assistance Team. It's a nonprofit out of Bakersfield that was formed by the state to go in and help school districts fix their financial issues. Well, FICMAT and three state administrators and the county and Jack O'Connell at the state superintendent level, they were all supposedly monitoring the finances in Oakland, and yet they put the entire blame on the Oakland School District for having not mismanaged finances, but they put too much, they said, I'm putting it in quotes, toward a raise for teachers. The former superintendent, Dennis Jaconis, gave a raise to recruit and retain good teachers. And so it ended up that Oakland went into state receivership. And do you think that there was improvement in the financial status of Oakland after that?
No.
No. They got a $100 million line of credit. The first state administrator, Randy Ward, drew the whole thing down before he left in 2006. And we are still paying on that. And that, in the course of that, in I think 2004 or 5, they decided they were going to, Don Parada decided to push a bill through the legislature to sell off district property. And there was a big fight that went on with that. because Oakland, they're looking at Oakland as, hey, the tech industry is expanding. San Francisco is getting too crowded and too expensive. Where do we go? Oh, Oakland. So these big developers came in and they wanted school district property because it sits on this beautiful lake, and they figured this would give them, you know, the ability to build all these high rises for fancy new apartments. And that's been a struggle too. So our feeling about the state takeover was a way of getting land. It was a way of putting pressure on Oakland to increase the number of charter schools, to break some of the comprehensive larger schools into small schools and then yank the money from that. So it's just been a really, you know, concerted effort on the part of a number of friends of charters and privatizers to take Oakland over in the way that New Orleans was taken over after Katrina.
Right. I understand. You know, I understand completely. And the thing is, Betty, is that I'm glad that you're saying it, because my listeners hear me say it so much. They hear me rail about Prop 13. I mean, it seems like every show I do, somehow it gets in there, you know, and I'm like, my poor listeners. I mean, how many times can they listen to Athena bitch about this? And so it's good for them to hear someone else putting it out there. You know, I really feel like my generation, you know, the 60s generation, yes, when they saw what we could do, when they saw the protests, when Black Panthers were born.
Yes. Yes.
That's when they decided we have to put an end to this great education, because they have the information. And it's because they have all this information that they're coming out now to protest. We have to make it so hard. We have to make it so expensive that they can't go. And so we have, really have an undereducated populace. Yeah. And they're all crammed together in these huge classrooms. But one of the things I did by having a private Montessori school is it was a K-12, and I would send everybody, you know, they could be as young as 10 years old. If they were ready, they could take a college class. And so, you know, once they got to college, you know, they didn't have to take those huge 100-level classes, you know, with hundreds of people in them. You know, because they'd already had them at the community school college. And so, you know, that was really wonderful for my students. And, you know, and I would tell people who were homeschooling, I would say, now, as your child is ready, find out what they're interested in and start them in college classes. You know, if they're under a certain age, you have to sign permission. But go ahead and do it. You know, that's how you do it. Of course, you can't do everything. Yes. So, you know, that's one thing that we did. And I, you know, I've always loved Oakland. I have an affinity for it. My family, that lives in the Bay Area, live in Palo Alto. But a couple of my sons do Fanmore activities there in Oakland in the park, and so they've learned to really love that community there, and so have I. And at first, you know, there was a kind of a sort of a like, who are you, you know, to Anthony, who runs this this league. When he was walking down the street, it was like, and Tony said, gee, we were by the university, and he said, gee, I can't believe that, you know, I got that kind of a vibe, you know, from somebody, you know, who's Black. I mean, what is it? And I said, it's those blue eyes, you know, give them a break. You know, what have they experienced from people who look like you? No, now they were wonderful. They were wonderful to me because because I'm dark, you know, and I have brown eyes and long hair, and I'm a hippie, so I kind of look like a Chicano or a Mexican, but I'm really Greek. I don't look Greek, though. But anyway, they were wonderful to me, so if he was with me, they left him alone. But it was quite fun. So now, you know, he enjoys it, and my grandson goes to the park, too. It's just wonderful. You know, we love Oakland, and we love the Bay Area. We love San Francisco, but you're right about the real estate, because you know as soon as we had the Martin Luther King, you know, and we had this, you know, like people were, and I remember in Pasadena, you know, friends of mine were saying my dad is selling our house because a black family bought a house next to ours, and he wasn't going to live next to a black family. And I thought, oh my word, the real estate people picked up on that, right? And so they started, they would only show certain areas to black families and certain areas to white families and certain areas to people of color. Oh, and certain areas, you know, and I think the only ones that escaped it were people who were Asian, you know, and I don't really know why. But, you know. Go ahead.
That's definitely been an issue. One of the big issues of trying to keep teachers in Oakland is that people can't afford to live here because of the gentrification.
Right.
And that's, you know, that ties in with what I was saying about developers wanting to get a hold of the surplus property period here in Oakland and pushing people out. I remember several years ago, the percentage of African American teachers has declined. From, in 2000, I had these statistics right here. The percentage of African American teachers in Oakland Unified was 30.3%. By 2010, 2011, it had declined to 18.3%. And this came from Ed data. And this is, we saw that happening where the teachers that looked like the kids that we served were fewer and fewer. And that's one of the beauties of Oakland, is that you have such a diverse population, and the importance of having teachers that look like the kids that they're teaching, as well as white teachers, to have a real diverse mix.
Right. Diverse.
Really worried about losing that.
Right. Diversity is the key.
Really, yes. Yeah. The strike was just, if you see any videos of the strike, it was just the absolute coming together of teachers of all, so many diverse teachers and students and parents and community, whereas back in 1996 when we struck for 26 days, there was a real division, I think, and partly because it went on for so long and there were some real problems in the strike. And one thing I was trying to figure out, what made this one so much more successful as far as a community outpouring of support? And part of it is definitely social media. I mean, when you've got cell phones and you can post videos right away and people can see, oh, this is happening at that school and this rally is happening down here, it really lends itself to a really cohesive kind of action. But also, I think just the fact that we're now really speaking, teachers are really speaking, they really were trying to put the focus not just on a salary increase for teachers, but a salary increase in order to keep teachers in Oakland, in order to allow teachers to become veterans and experienced, as opposed to this revolving door that they push through Teach for America, where you can just stick someone in the classroom, and that's just so not true. I wanted to say one more thing about students in the strike. The day after the TA was ratified, so this Monday, 2 days ago, hundreds of students walked out of school, with teachers in high schools and middle schools mainly, and went to the school board meeting, because they had scheduled a meeting at 10:30 that day, and the teachers were going back to work. So, of course, most teachers couldn't go. The students organized themselves, went to the school board, and protested the fact that the school board was now attempting to divide and conquer. They were saying, oh, we have to make cuts of up to $22 million in cuts because we have to find a way to pay for the teacher's raise. And so they were trying to pit the teachers and the students against each other and make the students think that the teachers had taken money out of their programs. And to the credit of most of the students, they refused to be bought off by that. They went and they protested and they said, we don't want to see restorative justice programs cut. We don't want to see programs that really support foster youth and Asian Pacific Islander youth. We don't want to see those programs cut. And we're not going to fall for the lie that the reason they're being cut is because you need to fund the teachers' salaries. No, those cuts were on the table back in January before the strike began. And you need to, so the students were really leading and saying, you need to take this to the state. We need to get more funding from the state. If we're really fighting for the schools our students deserve, then we can't continue to fight over crumbs at this level. Districts throughout the state have got to really put pressure on the government to make sure they can find the funds. If they can find the funds for other things, they can find the funds for our most precious resource, our students.
Yes.
So I'm really excited about how the students have been. They've been galvanized. They're not going to stop. They've learned some amazing lessons and good organizing from this strike.
I am just so impressed with the students. I really am. The Oakland students, I saw the videos, and I saw some of them on Democracy Now who were, you know, marching for the climate. And they were saying, well, you're in Oakland, so, you know, how do you feel about the teacher strike? Oh, I totally support them. We're behind them 100%, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, that was really, that was awesome. And I do believe that this younger generation is so amazing. And I don't like the way that some people, our generation, talk about them. It really annoys me. You know, blaming the millennials for Hillary's loss. That just upset me so much. Mm. You know, I just, it drives me crazy. But at any rate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was so heartened by that. I think I posted something on my Facebook page by a former student that I had when she was in second and third grade. I had her for 2 years, spoke very little English, a young Mexican-American student. And now she's in her 30s, and she is a parent leader. She's got three daughters. And she wrote to me and said, remember when we used to go to strike school back in the 96 strike? Absolutely. And she was working at one of the strike schools, or what they called solidarity schools, during the strike. And a real leader, posting things. Another student that I had, same thing. She was at her daughter's and son's school, picketing and videotaping. And it's really exciting to see these young people that have grown up in Oakland schools, in Oakland public schools, taking a real leadership role. And, you know, I know they're not going to stop fighting for what their students deserve. And it's just really heartening for me as a teacher to see some of my students just coming out. And I know I talked to a lot of other teachers that felt the same way. They would run into students on the picket lines and just be excited about, you know, seeing what they've now become. Keith Brown, the president of OEA, was talking about that, how he'd seen some of his former students and just the excitement of being in a position to feel like you're on the wave of some real change. So, yeah, the strike has been settled. The contract's been ratified. But the movement for better schools in Oakland and throughout the state, no way is that going to end.
I think
the community has... You know, even people that felt like they didn't get what they wanted in the contract are totally committed to continuing the fight. I think there are very few people that are going to go, we're not going to do anything. No, I mean, the slogan throughout the strike was, when we strike, we win. And I think a lot of what I've heard is part of what we won is this amazing sense of solidarity in the community that, it's just, I haven't seen anything like it. And like I'd mentioned, I wasn't able to participate because I was recovering from surgery. But the bright side of that was I spent every day, all day, on my computer watching Facebook posts, getting some friends posted things for me, or they'd videotape for me. One friend went all the way around the school board meeting and filmed people and said, "This is for you, Betty. I'm taking you on a trip all the way around the building so you can see people in action." And so I got sort of this bird's eye view of what was going on. I got to watch all the rallies because people filmed those. I got to watch when they shut down the state building on Friday, last Friday, and just the incredible enthusiasm, dedication, passion. And it wasn't about, you know, it wasn't about just getting a raise. It was about how do we create the schools that our students deserve, the artwork, the people that, I don't know if you saw, there was a video that was put together by some of the luminaries in Oakland, I guess. I mean, real activists in Oakland. The two men that did the movie Blind Spotting created a video about what Oakland teachers want and what they're fighting for. And they had a number of people like Mahershala Ali and Steph Curry and MC Hammer that participated in the film and just kind of brought that to a wider audience. Dolores Huerta came and marched. She's, what, 89 years old. She marched with the teachers to the state building. Robert Reich spoke on behalf of the teachers. We got greetings from Bernie Sanders. Alice Walker sent her support. So I think it's education finally is starting to get the recognition it needs for why are we lowballing our most precious resource.
Right.
And you and I know that, you know, black and brown children, unfortunately, in the minds of privatizers or people that don't care about public education, people like Betsy DeVos, they don't care. Keep them ignorant, like you said. Don't allow people to be educated. But, boy, the city of Oakland showed, and the city of Los Angeles before them, and teachers throughout the country are showing, no, we really care about our students, and they deserve every advantage that wealthier kids get in wealthier
right.
communities.
Yes, I so totally agree with you. And I feel like you've empowered that community has been empowered. And not just
yes.
that community, but the entire nation has been empowered by the Oakland strike. It's monumental. I don't know if people really realize how much the Oakland strike means, pardon me, to the whole nation.
Yeah.
The whole nation.
I think it really has. It has galvanized the attention of the nation, and I think it's really like it's set the groundwork for future struggles. I think the communication that was made throughout the strike, you know, the ties that were made, the feeling of solidarity is something that you just don't lose. And I think especially, you know, for students to see that, for kids to be out on the picket line and then be able to see it on the news and be able to see what other people are saying and what's being fought for. Little kids understood that.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's just you know, and for Oakland especially, because Oakland deliberately has been given negative, you know, I have people saying to me, "Oh, you live in Oakland. Aren't you afraid to live in Oakland?" And I say, you know, I've lived in Oakland for almost 40 years. I love this city. I love the people in this city. It has problems like any city does, but I would never exchange it for a city where you don't have the same kind of diversity and the same kind of cultural in amazing diversity in terms of culture and restaurants and
right.
people. And
right.
it's just, yeah.
It's an experience just to go there. Really, it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I do love mm-hmm. Oakland. Well, I think we should probably go now, but I want to, you know, I don't know, you know, if you want to give out contact information, people can always
go to the Education Now Facebook page and comment, and you know, and if they comment there and it's something that, you know, they're asking you, or you could comment there, you know, they can do that. Sure. Does that work?
That works, or I don't mind giving out my email address if people want to contact me that way,
okay.
Or they could look at my Facebook page. But the email is B as in Betty, olsonjo@yahoo.com.
Yes, and I'll put that in the promotion so they have it there as well. Well, I have just enjoyed talking to you so very, very much, Betty.
I've enjoyed it too.
It's just been a great pleasure. I think you're a wonderful woman, and I'm sure you were an incredible teacher, just given by the enthusiasm of your students. And I want you to know that I want our listeners to know that they can listen and download free anytime at the website, and to please join us, as I said, on the Education Now Facebook page to leave comments and join the conversation. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. And Education Now is also a proud supporter of the American Montessori Society, and their website is www.amshq.org. I am sending cosmic love to you all, and I am saying thank you to Betty, and to her husband, Mike, and her son for sharing her with us tonight so that we could do this recording. And I'm Athena Melville, your host on Education Now. And as always, I always end by saying, follow the child, which is a quote by Maria Montessori. So goodbye, unless you have anything else you want to add, some wisdom, Betty.
My only wisdom is, I think you've said it all, follow the child. And also, if you really want to see the way to do education, look at Finland, the example of Finland, where they pay their teachers what they deserve. They treat the children as a child, as a whole child. They make sure that children have adequate nourishment. There's just... Finland has wonderful examples for how we really should be treating our children.
Yes, they do. They have very high ratings. They're fantastic. And I think it's interesting that when you ask them, you know, how did you do it? Why are you so great? And they say, you're from America. We come to America to get our teacher training. They teach us, they've taught us everything we know. And then we come back to Finland and all in our countries, and we do what we execute it. But what you do is you're not following what you've been trained to do. You know,
right.
the teachers in America cannot do what's best for their students because you won't pay for it.
Right, right.
So,
there's never money to pay for what's,
Right. Yeah. Well, okay.
Well, thank you so much, Athena.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure. I hope we get to talk again. And thank you to Anthony Cody, because he led me to you.
Yes. Thank you, Anthony.
Bye-bye, Betty.
Okay. Bye, Athena. Thank you so much.
Out on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked. the one you know.